There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? I'm brought to you live.
Hi, welcome back to Unfit to Print. This is CKUT on 90.3 FM, broadcasting not live, but still from Montreal. My name is Amy Lloyd. Unfortunately, Maya, my co-host, and I will be taking a break from recording together. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, Maya has decided to go home to Toronto. Don't worry, she will still be helping with production and interviewing, so you will be hearing her voice again. Today we broadcast from the Jojiage, the traditional territory of Haudenosaunee and the Anishinaabe Nations. The time now is 5:01. Today we'll be playing an audio essay written and produced by us. Last week we spoke about the racist implications of problematic discourse regarding the novel coronavirus. This week we'll be discussing social distancing. Firstly, we want to acknowledge not everyone is in the position where they can choose to self-isolate and stay at home. This audio essay aims to encourage those who can stay at home to do so, in order to flatten the curve of infection. Additionally, we'll be updating listeners on the latest events regarding Canada, McGill, and COVID-19. We want to issue a content warning. As we briefly discussed anti-Asian sentiment, we will be back after this short break, so stay tuned. Thank you. Welcome back to Unfit to Print. That was Men I Trust with Tail Whip, followed by Julie Arsenal with The Softness. Now for our weekly headline roundup. Thankfully, the Région de Logement Québec office confirmed late Sunday that only hearings dealing with the health and safety of tenants will continue, sufficiently canceling any evictions hearings during the COVID-19 pandemic. This means that tenants will not be evicted if they can't pay their rent during the health crisis. This comes as a relief to many, as last week the Corporation des Propriétaires disagreed with the proposed moratorium on evictions. If you have found yourself social distancing or quarantining with an abuser, you may worry about feeling trapped in a dangerous home situation due to the coronavirus. Here are some numbers you can reach out to via the National Domestic Violence Hotline. First number we have is 1-800-799-7233 or 1-800-787-3224, or you can chat thehotline.org. We will also be posting these numbers to our Twitter. Please search for Unfit to Print. Unfortunately, Quebec will not be open to open emergency centers for any events of floodings this spring due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Though last year, Quebec opened shelters for thousands who were forced to leave their homes, opening emergency living quarters for many people will risk the spread of the coronavirus further. Public Security Minister Genevieve Goubal said residents in high-risk areas will have to think carefully about where to go in the event of the flooding. She asked municipalities to secure university dorms and hotels instead. Stated earlier last week, a scary statistic came out saying that 30 to 70% of the Canadian population could get coronavirus. However, there have been no statistics pertaining to the virus and the Indigenous population. Last week, Ottawa held a technical briefing on how Indigenous communities can help combat COVID-19, but they offered few specific details. Suggestions of relocation were brought up, alongside those of, quote, isolation tents, unquote. However, no concrete option was provided for the Indigenous population prevention strategy. That was our weekly headline roundup. So next we're going to be playing our audio essay. Stay tuned after these next few songs. Again, as said before, we will link any of the sources that we mentioned earlier to our Twitter after the show. Please search for Unfit to Print.
You're like a hot supervillain at the top of your game. I try collecting all the evidence to give you the blame. Making footprints round the railroad, laying thick the gasoline. I am tied against the tracks, but I can't figure out the ending. Can't get enough, can't get enough. What would it take to say it's over? When would I want to rest my head upon your shoulder? What will it take to say I don't think a rescue is in order? You're like a snake in the middle of a regular day. There was that time I tried to catch it, but it slid. Without
Welcome back to Unfit to Print on CKUT 90.3 FM. That was Joshua Snakes by Common Holly, followed by Metric with Black Sheep. Now for our audio essay. Today we'll be playing an audio essay written and produced by me. Last week we spoke about the racist implications of problematic discourse regarding the novel coronavirus. This week we'll be discussing social distancing. Firstly, we want to acknowledge not everyone is in the position where they can choose to self-isolate and stay at home. So this audio essay aims to encourage those who can stay home to do so in order to flatten the curve of infection. Additionally, we'll be updating listeners on the latest events regarding Canada, McGill, and COVID-19. Once again, we want to issue a content warning as we briefly discuss anti-Asian sentiment. Last week, we spoke about the ever-increasing racist and anti-Asian sentiment occurring within popular discourse. This racism was a direct result of the newly emerging pandemic known as the novel coronavirus, or COVID-19. Having already addressed one social conflict arising from this pandemic, we wanted to revisit the topic to discuss another social conflict, known as social distancing, and why now, if you are in the position to do so, is an important time to self-isolate. Firstly, I just want to quickly recap what the novel coronavirus actually is and how it impacts the body. So the coronaviruses are a large family of viruses, which may cause illness in animals or humans. The most recently discovered coronavirus, known as COVID-19, is spreading very quickly. The virus causes an infection of the chest, airways, and lungs, sometimes resulting in complications such as pneumonia and possibly death. The virus was unknown before December's outbreak in 2019 in China's Wuhan province. Now, the novel coronavirus has since spread worldwide. The symptoms of COVID-19 are a fever, cough, and shortness of breath, which are similar to other illnesses that are much more common, such as the cold and flu. Symptoms are not always present and may take a 2 full weeks to develop. Transmitted mainly through respiratory, nasal, and mouth droplets, health professionals are asking people to avoid close contacts with those who are affected, cough and sneeze into your sleeve, wash hands well and often, and stay home if you're feeling sick to avoid spreading it to others. The virus is mainly of a concern regarding elderly populations and people with predisposed pulmonary conditions. With that said, more and more young people are being diagnosed with this virus, children and people in their early 20s to late 20s. So the grand total of the international coronavirus case has surpassed 100,000 cases, with the majority being in China, and now also Europe, including countries such as Italy. As of yesterday, there are a total of 179,721 confirmed cases worldwide. However, that number has definitely gone up since this was recorded. There are 4,085 cases in the US, 373 cases in Canada, and 50 specifically in Quebec. A scientist in Saskatchewan isolate the virus, and volunteers in Seattle partake in the first human trial for a vaccine to protect against COVID-19. The world is in the midst of trying to figure out this disease. However, there is one thing we know for certain. COVID-19 is a very contagious virus. This is why, in the last week, governments around the world are urging folks to stay inside, avoid large gatherings, and temporarily closing schools as well as universities in hopes to flatten the curve and get ahead of the inevitable influx of coronavirus cases. Before you think, but Canada only has 373 cases, whereas Italy has like almost 28,000, Canada's fine when observing the context. I ask you to reconsider. Last week, when Maya and I first reported on the novel coronavirus, Canada had 77 cases. In only 7 days, 296 more cases have been reported, along with 6 resulting deaths. The goal here is not to spark panic, but instead to emphasize the importance of social distancing and why now is the time to self-isolate if you can. First, however, let us consider the question, what is social distancing, and what does it look like in the context of Canada, along with other countries around the world? On Sunday, March 14th, 2020, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommended that gatherings of 50 people or more should not take place in the next 8 weeks in order to take preventative measures, hopefully limiting the spread of COVID-19. Worldwide, public areas such as libraries and universities, including McGill, religious institutions, and sports, as well as cultural institutions, are temporarily closed. The term social distancing has re-entered mainstream political discourse when discussing ways in which civilians can protect themselves and others from the novel coronavirus. Social distancing is a non-pharmaceutical solution to infection control. The aim is to minimize contact and social interactions during outbreaks of viruses, that are transmitted via air droplets. Despite this movement towards normalizing social distancing, according to the New York Times, quote, people all over the United States have been out in large numbers at restaurants, bars, and even sporting events, suggesting more than a little confusion around what social distancing is and who should be practicing it, unquote. Quote, "This is deeply worrying," experts said, "because even those who become only mildly ill, and maybe even those who never even know they're infected, can propel the exponential movement of the virus through the population," unquote, as stated by the New York Times. If you do choose to see people, attempt to remain 6 feet apart. Additionally, the New York Times states that social distancing also includes, quote, "avoiding public transportation whenever possible, limit non-essential travel, work from home and skip social gatherings, and definitely do not go to crowded bars and sporting arenas," unquote. Dr. Gerardo Chow, chair of the Population Health Sciences at Georgia State University, issued a statement saying, quote, "Every single reduction in the number of contacts you have per day with relatives, with friends, co-workers, in school will have a significant impact on the ability of the virus to spread in the population," unquote. This strategy was proven effective in the past with the pandemic of the Spanish influenza in 1918, as well as the Mexico City flu pandemic in 2009. So you may be thinking, but I'm young, COVID-19 only impacts those with underlying health conditions or older people. For me, it'll be just the flu. Firstly, let us debunk the myth that COVID-19 does not severely impact younger people. Although the likelihood of recovery is higher, COVID-19 is still a seriously damaging flu. Here is a clip from Connor Reed, a 25-year-old teacher working in Wuhan, who recently recovered from the novel coronavirus. Here is a clip of him describing his experience.
The cold was stuffy nose, sinus problems, coughing. It wasn't very serious. It was just quite uncomfortable. When I had the flu symptoms, that felt like I'd been hit by a truck. It was quite debilitating in regards to just generally feeling unwell. The lights were affecting me, sound. I just wanted to rest. It really wasn't great. However, it wasn't life-threatening. When I had pneumonia, that's the point where it was getting quite serious. It felt like I could only use half my lung capacity. Every breath that I took wasn't enough, and I just couldn't get enough air.
Secondly, consider the health of others. Although you may not be high risk, the less precautions you take for yourself, the more you risk infecting others. As stated by the New York Times, quote, "There is a greater public health imperative. Even people who show only mild symptoms can pass on the virus to many, many others, particularly in the early course of the infection before they even realize that they're sick. So you might keep the chain of infection going right to your own older or high-risk relatives. You may also contribute to the number of people infected, causing the pandemic to grow rapidly and overwhelm the healthcare system," unquote. Furthermore, it is important to remember that even if you're not symptomatic, doesn't mean that you're not hosting the novel coronavirus. Therefore, social distancing, and if required due to circumstances of travel, self-quarantine are essential. Social distancing, which differs from self-quarantine, does not mean you cannot leave the home. Obviously, we must leave for essential travel purposes, such as picking up medicine from the pharmacy or going to the grocery store. Even going for a hike, a walk with your dog around the neighborhood, or a bike ride are okay activities. However, when doing these things, be aware of your surroundings, ensuring that you aren't coming in close contact with anyone. And when you return home, wash your hands and wipe down any surfaces you come in contact with. When you do go grocery shopping, buy as many supplies as you can in order to lessen the amount of trips you take. Additionally, pick a time when you know the stores are usually quieter with smaller crowds. Wear gloves or use disinfectant wipes when using grocery carts or baskets. And of course, do not touch your face until you are able to properly disinfect your hands. According to Dr. Caitlin Rivers, who works at Johns Hopkins University, you should store away your phones, ensuring that no one is touching their screen while touching public services. Phones, quote, could be a transmission opportunity, unquote, says Dr. Rivers. In regards to outings, many countries have decided to close restaurants as well as bars. Additionally, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention now urge people to stop hosting gatherings with over 50 guests. When it comes to visiting friends and family, certainly do not see those who are older or sick. According to Dr. Caitlin Rivers, quote, the smaller the gathering, the healthier the people are to start with, the lower the risk of the situation is going to be, unquote. Ideally, socializing during social distancing would be minimal as possible, that meaning one or two people that you see. If you think the number is unnecessarily low, consider that every person you interact with, you also interact with every person they interact with, who interacts with every person that person interacts with, and so on and so forth. So the more minimal and exclusive your circle becomes, the better chance we have at minimizing the inevitable spread of COVID-19. According to a study conducted by the Center for Mathematical Modeling of Infectious Diseases, otherwise known as CMMID, it is possible that 25% of transmission took place in the pre-symptomatic stages. Although the study has yet to be peer-reviewed, we should still consider and take these statistics seriously. I want to address the McGill community while discussing social distancing. Many of you traveled over Reading Week, as did I. Since I traveled, I chose to self-quarantine, I chose to distance myself, and I chose this in order to prevent the spread of the highly contagious coronavirus, despite not having symptoms. However, many people all over the world, including McGill, chose to partake in St. Paddy's Day celebrations. This was a highly irresponsible decision. In upcoming weeks, I urge you to take social distancing seriously. This message is not directed towards those who did not have a choice when it came to staying inside. Some students, I acknowledge, must work, and some students have responsibilities or extenuating circumstances which require them to interact with others. However, partying is not an essential activity and is something that can and must be avoided. So some may be wondering, well, how do we know social distancing is effective? What is the proof behind this? Well, according to Vox, quote, COVID-19 transmission are following an exponential growth trajectory. That is, the rate of spread of the infection is proportional to the number of people infected. Each infected person is expected to infect a certain number of people, around 2.5 right now, who each in turn go to infect 2.5 more, unquote. Many suggest thinking about this infection rate in doubles, so 1, 2, 4, 8, and so on. This means that to get a million infected, one would have to interact with 20 people. Through social distancing, we are able to lower the peak of infection and slow down the spread. This strategy, quote, buys valuable time for health providers, allowing them to acquire the tools they need, like beds and ventilators, while avoiding being overwhelmed by patients. Flattening the curve of cases over time can therefore save lives, and in places where the healthcare system is already close to capacity, it's critical, unquote, as stated by Vox. We as civilians want to try our very best to avoid ICUs running out of capacity. This can be achieved through limiting non-essential socializing. There are other ways in which the spread can be contained, however. South Korea, in particular, has become a model country when it comes to combating the novel coronavirus. Here is a CBC clip interviewing Tina Park, who discusses South Korea's effective strategy of mass testing.
Different countries are handling the outbreak in different ways. Millions are locked down in Italy. In South Korea, only a few thousand. Tina Park is a Canadian, and she works for the Center for Responsibility to Protect and has lived in both countries, and she joins us now with her insights. Let's talk about South Korea. They've been praised for the way that it has handled the outbreak, especially around the testing. Can you tell us about why they seem to have been successful without having a mass lockdown?
So the case of South Korea is very interesting because when the outbreak first happened, we were so worried about the rapid spread. But in fact, what was happening, John, was that the diagnosis system in South Korea was so advanced that people were just being tested more. So far, about 260,000 South Koreans have been tested for coronavirus. And the way it works is that because it's free, South Koreans have very easy access to one of the testing centers, and they could even drive through if they so wish, and they would be notified within 5 to 6 hours of testing with about 98% of accuracy. And once they're diagnosed, they're either, you know, notified on their phone or treated immediately. So what has happened is that the South Korean government collaborated very closely with private companies and labs, And the results are sent to one of 96 testing labs. And as soon as you find out what is happening with the particular patient, so let's say this person is diagnosed with COVID-19, then the government uses all the possible technologies. So that includes GPS tracking, using credit card history, as well as telephone records to trace where this particular person has been. So my mom in Korea, for instance, could find out exactly where somebody from her neighborhood who's been diagnosed positive has been through that day and avoid those areas. And this kind of approach has been very effective in early diagnosis and isolation in South Korea, which we're not seeing in Italy.
Tina, you have, of course, plenty of family in South Korea. What are you hearing from them about what daily life is like there?
Well, first of all, a very noticeable difference in everyday life for South Koreans is that all social gatherings have been canceled. And this has been the case for about 3 weeks now. And South Koreans are mostly working from home, so public areas are not only regularly disinfected, but generally empty. We also know that in Korea, there is a very strong culture in the public to comply with government's policies and approaches. So the Korean Center for Disease Control sends regular updates. It used to be two press briefings per day and three alerts. Now it's about one press briefing a day. And everybody in Korea could easily access the mapping of infected patients and quarantine cases, as well as what they should do if they exhibit any symptoms.
Now, Tina, you've been able to, of course, not only live in South Korea, but also live in Italy, and comparisons are being made by the way it's been handled there separately and the increase in the number of patients. So let's talk about Italy. How would you compare, to your knowledge, about their approach to the outbreak?
So, John, it's very unfortunate what's been happening in Italy, because Italy was very late to declare the situation as emergency. And what they did in Korea was not followed in Italy, in the sense that early diagnosis simply wasn't there. So to this day, in Italy, 61 million people are in a lockdown situation. And the number of deaths in Italy is about 1,000, whereas it's only about 67 in Korea. And that has a lot to do with failed testing or lack of access to testing facilities. So far, only 73,000 people have been tested in Italy. And, you know, just locking down areas and facilities when a lot of people are infected doesn't really help contain the virus. What would have been really helpful is to have a very coherent method for early diagnosis and have a very clear line of communication. In the Italian case, the government miscommunicate a few times, which just help with the public fear and paranoia. And right now, a lot of people who should be tested are not tested simply because they don't have the infrastructure to support that.
Mass testing is another effective strategy in order to control the spread of the virus. Unfortunately, not all countries have a strong healthcare infrastructure, meaning those belonging to marginalized communities will be placed in vulnerable safety positions when it comes to cost and accessibility. According to CNN, quote, the American medical system is scrambling to keep up with this directive, unquote. That directive being the need to test every suspected case. America continues to face a shortage of available testing. Eric Fielding, epidemiologist and senior fellow at the Federation of American Scientists, issued a statement saying, quote, right now we are playing catch up and testing people who are very sick. We need to make testing available so that we can get to the frontier of the cases so that the moment someone develops symptoms, we test and quarantine them, unquote. Americans are preparing for the inevitable limitation of resources. Additionally, many remain confused about who is allowed to be tested. Quote, the guidelines now include the warning that older patients and individuals who have severe underlying medical conditions or are immunocompromised should contact their health provider early, even if their illness is mild, unquote, as stated by CNN. Courtney Sherry, a 34-year-old high school teacher from Texas, believes she may be positive for the COVID-19 virus. Concerned about infecting her parents or her children, she contacted her doctor, who told her there's no way that Courtney will be able to get tested, and she just should accept that she's just not going to get a test. Obviously, this is going to cause a lot of panic for Americans. While this panic occurs, we need to consider how this lack of accessibility will impact migrant workers in the United States, those without insurance, and those who, despite having some insurance, will not be able to afford the very high cost of American healthcare. I now want to turn our focus onto Canada and discuss the current state of affairs. Yesterday, Trudeau announced that he would be closing the border to mainly non-Canadian citizens, with the exceptions of permanent residents, U.S. citizens, immediate family of Canadian citizens, diplomats, and air crews. Additionally, anyone exhibiting symptoms of the virus will be barred from entering the country. In Quebec, the government has asked all non-essential businesses to temporarily close their doors, such as gyms, cinemas, bars, ski hills, etc. For those who are unsure, essential business would include pharmacies and grocery stores. Lego also limited restaurants to a 50% capacity. Quebec's Education Minister Jean-François Roberge announced that essential care service workers will be able to drop their children at a special emergency child care center free of charge. Essential care workers include police officers, firefighters, and healthcare employees. The center will also host children from the age of 4 to 13. Additionally, visitors are banned from long-term care facilities, hospitals, and senior homes. Via Rail has released a travel advisory, canceling a considerable amount of upcoming train trips. The advisory reads, quote, "As a result of significant reductions in passenger volumes experienced in the last week, combined with the need to deploy our resources to more effectively deal with the pandemic as of Tuesday, March 17th, services will be reduced by 50% in Quebec City. Windsor corridors of March 17th, Via Rail will be introducing a modified meal service aboard its trains. In line with the health authority's social distancing guidelines, we will limit the amount of staff and passenger interaction to a minimum, and this will include our meal service. Passengers in economy will receive a complimentary snack and water. In business class, the regular meal service will be replaced by light meal and water. In both classes, no other food or beverage service will be offered, and passengers with food restrictions are being asked to plan accordingly. As of March 17th, additional onboard employees will be deployed on all of our trains in order to sanitize our coach cars while in operation. This is in addition to the previously announced enhanced cleaning protocol in effect at terminal stations. Please note that these additional measures may result in delayed trips and late departures. Via Rail's overnight trains, Toronto, Vancouver, and Montreal and Halifax, have been cancelled beginning March 13th, 2020, unquote. As of this morning, Ontario Premier Doug Ford declares a state of emergency with a $300 million relief fund. Quote, effective immediately, recreation centers, public libraries, private schools, daycares, bars, restaurants, theaters, concert venues, and cinemas will be closed until March 30th at the least, unquote, according to the National Post. Premier Ford also announced a $300 million first stage relief package. Quote, the fund will be put towards providing 75 more critical care beds, 500 more acute care beds, and 75 more COVID-19 response centers, unquote, as stated by the National Post. In Quebec, there are now 14 coronavirus screening clinics. Last week, there were only 3. According to CTV News, quote, the number of available lines will increase Monday from 1,200 to 2,000, and 80 additional nurses will be able to respond to the request of citizens worried about their state of health. As of March 16th, the 14 clinics designated COVID-19 are open. There will be 2 in the Montreal area, 1 in the national capital, 4 in the Maurice Centre de Quebec, 2 in the Estrie area, 1 in the Outaouais area, 1 in Laval, 1 in Lindorie, 1 in Laurentians, 1 in Montarret. 4 are planned to be open between March 16th and 20th. There will be 2 on Saguenay-Lac-Saint-Jean, and there will be 2 more in Montarret, unquote. It is also essential that we consider how the virus will impact Indigenous communities across Canada. Madeleine Redfern, who is the president of Nouveau-Jacques is a, quote, Nunavut-based company incorporated to advocate for improved connectivity in Indigenous, Northern, and rural and remote regions and communities, unquote, according to LinkedIn. In a thread of tweets, Madeline points out that we should be more concerned for Northern Indigenous areas when it comes to infrastructure and healthcare. The tweet reads, quote, in 30 days, there will be 1,024 times the number of infected people as there is today. If your community does not immediately put social distancing into practice, divide that number calculated by population of your city and get the percentage of people who will be affected 30 days from now. You should assume that the virus is everywhere at this point, even if you have no confirmed cases in your area. Next, take 15, multiply it, and multiply that of the final 30-day number of the total infected people. This will provide an estimate of the serious cases which will require hospitalization. Compare this number to the number of beds and ventilators available at your local hospital. Iqaluit Hospital is a 35-bed acute care facility. That's right, 35 beds. Generally, in most hospitals, 65% of the beds are already occupied by patients unrelated to the coronavirus. How many ventilators does the Iqaluit General Hospital have? I don't know, but I'd be surprised if it's more than five. In the other Nunavut communities, given those are nursing stations, maybe one per community. Either way, we know in Nunavut what is true for everywhere else in the world, that is, or will deal with the coronavirus. Too many patients, not enough beds, and a serious shortage of ventilators. Any place that becomes overwhelmed will have a harder time dealing with the virus. Unquote. In regards to the McGill community, all McGill in-person events on or off campus are canceled. Classes will be moved online and are currently postponed until March 30th. To learn more and follow updates regarding Canada and McGill, check out the McGill Daily. Our news editors Yasna and Emily have been working tirelessly to update you folks on the ongoing situation both nationally and provincially. I have linked this source titled COVID-19 at McGill, resources and updates to our Twitter, so search for Unfit to Print. Before I conclude, I want to say a few little reminders. Last night, in a tweet, Trump referred to COVID-19 as the Chinese virus. As mentioned last episode and earlier in this episode, many American government electives are using problematic language when discussing the virus, which is ultimately leading to an increase of discriminatory attitudes and behaviors against Asian communities. If you see someone refer to the COVID-19 virus as the Chinese virus or the Wuhan virus, correct them. We need to stop the stigmatization against Asian communities. Also, I know social distancing is difficult, but be thankful we live in an era of FaceTime, Skype, Google Hangout, and Snapchat. Last week, I concluded with the segment and said, stay calm and stay woke. This week, I urge you to still stay calm, still stay woke, and now, if you can, stay indoors. So thank you for listening to this audio essay. That was our audio essay. We hope you found that informative. Up next, we're playing a few tunes before we wrap up for the week.
I'm just a poor boy.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Unfit to Print on CKUT 90.3 FM. That was Andrew Hang with Dolphins, followed by More with Heaven's Only Wishful. We want to thank our listeners for tuning in to another episode of Unfit to Print. Remember, we are still airing episodes, so don't forget to tune in next week at 5 p.m. Playing us out, we have Run for Short with Bummer.
Looking in the mirror, my reflection got me triggered. You say that I'm looking pretty, I swear that I'm getting it. I think it must be obvious, I can hear the compliments. Just feeling shitty, think that everyone's oblivious. I'm open by the summer, I won't be feeling like I do. Sometimes I wonder, will it always be a bummer, yeah. There are times I wish that I was somebody. Hoping I can get this fixed. Ask if I'm okay, I say no, not even a little bit. Feels like I'm inhibited, permanent piece of shit. Please just tell me anyway that everything will be okay. I'm open by the summer, I won't be feeling like I do. Sometimes I wonder, will it always be a bummer, yeah. I'm hating myself.